Welcome to the Taxcast from the Tax Justice Network. Around 20 minutes each month of news, scandal and analysis you won't find anywhere else. With me, Naomi Fowler. The Taxcast is available to everyone on www.tackletaxhavens.com. It's also on the Tax Justice Network's website, www.taxjustice.net/taxcast. You can subscribe to our RSS feed, to the Tax Justice Network's YouTube channel, email me on naomi@taxjustice.net, look for us on iTunes, or find us on a radio station near you. Coming up later, corporate welfare. Is your government telling you how much it's spending on subsidising big business? But first, a quick roundup of this month's Tax Justice news. Occupy is back. In Hong Kong, police beat and pepper-sprayed pro-democracy protesters from the so-called Umbrella Movement. There's been no support from the finance sector, of course. We've covered before on the Taxcast how the big four accounting companies there paid for press advertisements stating their opposition to the democracy protests. And in London, Occupy held a 9-day camp outside Parliament to protest the political capture by financial interests in the UK. There too, police have been working hard to stop their programme of talks and workshops. John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network.
The British have prided themselves on having the mother of parliaments. When you look at it, actually, the British state and the key British parties are all very, very captive to very wealthy and powerful interests. This is what the Occupy movement came together to discuss and protest against: the loss of democracy in Britain. Hence, it's extremely ironic that a perfectly legal protest is being constantly harassed by the police. It just goes to show how far democracy has been eroded in Britain.
Tax Justice Network Africa has taken the Kenyan government to court to try to stop a double taxation treaty between Kenya and Mauritius. We'll have more on that later. This month, Britain's second largest energy supplier has become the first FTSE 100 company to be awarded the Fair Tax Mark. The Fair Tax Mark's the world's first independent accreditation process for identifying companies making a genuine effort to be transparent about their tax affairs. And no, the sky hasn't fallen in because a big company's decided to commit to fairness and transparency. In Russia, Vladimir Putin's considering an amnesty to try to coax some oligarchs to return some of the cash they've got hoarded offshore. The fact he himself probably has his own stash somewhere out there is neither here nor there, it seems. We're curious about how the Western banking system will deal with it, if it happens. Colombia's cracking down on tax abuse. It's just added Panama, Kuwait, Barbados, Qatar and the United Arab Emirates to the list it considers to be tax havens. And for the first time, politicians there are about to introduce prison sentences of up to 4 years for any citizen failing to declare foreign assets worth more than $3.9 million. And finally, China's not waiting around for the OECD or the G20 to make decisions on tax reform. It's started an extensive audit of transnational corporations. Their particular area of interest is on profit shifting over a 10-year period. It looks like some companies might be expecting a large backdated tax bill. And that's the Tax Justice News Roundup. Now we're going to talk to John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network for his take on this month. OK, John, let's start with Apple's tax deal. The European Union Commission's reviewed the deal and their initial findings are that it does break the European Union rules and it amounts to illegal state aid. I think Apple was saving about $9 billion a year from this deal. And, you know, Apple was able to do things like set up 3 Irish subsidiaries with no tax residency in any country whatsoever. Ireland was taxing Apple's income at less than 1%.
Right. Well, this is a fascinating and very important story. And it goes back a long way because Apple has been established in Ireland for several decades. So the European Commission has come rather late to it and is investigating whether these tax deals set up in 1991 and 2007 actually are anti-competitive. What they've got to do is to prove that these special tax deals constituted state aid. And in order to prove that, they must show that the measure, the ruling, agreed with Ireland, fulfilled four conditions. Condition one, did it confer an advantage on Apple? And this advantage must be selective. It can't be an advantage given to others. Now, that one seems to be relatively straightforward. Will it distort competition? Well, clearly, if one company has the ruling and others don't, then there's a market distortion. And will it affect intra-union trade, that is, trade within the European Union? Now, if the Commission is able to prove that the Irish authorities were able to use their discretion in a ways which allowed Apple to deviate away from the OECD's arm's length principle, because much will hinge upon whether or not they were applying the arm's length principle in practice, then this can be deemed to be preferential treatment to Apple and custom made for Apple and not given to others. So it looks as if the European Commission have a relatively strong case on their hands. The fact is that they've been able to make this case partly because of a leak coming out of Ireland, which has demonstrated that the special deal was done. And in fact, and this looks particularly bad for Apple, the Commission is claiming that the Irish authorities reverse-engineered a deal with Apple in order to agree a level of taxable income that was acceptable to Apple. Now, if that is the case, and that term reverse-engineering, which is used in the Commission's initial paper, is a very strong one. The Commission's position seems to be a very strong one.
The Irish government's now announced it's about to abolish the so-called double Irish tax deal, but not for another 4 years.
Right. Well, what's happened, of course, is that the Irish authorities have come under such pressure that in the last few weeks they've agreed that they will have to get rid of the double Irish, the huge advantage they use to attract giant techs like Apple and Google to Ireland. That will be abolished, but it'll be abolished over a long period, through to 2020, allowing big companies like Apple and Google plenty of time to rearrange their affairs. And the depressing side of this is that it's always a case of, with Ireland, of one step forward and two steps back. Ireland has now announced that they're going to set up a patent box facility, which of course the United Kingdom has already put into place, which will allow companies to claim a very large discount on corporate tax on any revenue earned from patents and intellectual property. So here we have yet another country going into the patent box monkey business. Switzerland is now talking about a similar thing with what they're calling the license box. So we have yet another case of a race to the bottom between tax havens. All very depressing and a very sad and sordid outcome to this story.
Right, so what are we likely to see now, do you think, with the Apple situation? Because next on the EU Commission's agenda, I think they're going to be looking at the tax deals enjoyed by Starbucks in the Netherlands and Amazon in Luxembourg. Are we looking at sort of long protracted court cases, do you think, where these companies are going to be challenging these kind of findings?
Well, there's no question that the companies involved and the tax havens involved will be fighting at every stage to block these. The big question is whether the new competition commissioner, the designate commissioner, Vestager, will actually give these the high priority that they require.
Right, so we'll be watching that one. Let's move on to Africa, because there's something very interesting going on in Kenya. Tax Justice Network Africa's taking the Kenyan government to court over a double taxation agreement with Mauritius. And they're worried that it's going to be used to avoid capital gains tax, which is something Kenya recently introduced. But Mauritius being Mauritius doesn't tax capital gains, and their argument is, and this is very interesting, I find, that a deal like that goes against the Kenyan constitution, which says that financial policies must be accountable and sustainable. What a great constitution that is, first of all. But tell us about this case.
Well, this is a very interesting case. As far as I know, it's unprecedented, not only in Kenya, but elsewhere, that a civil society organisation like Tax Justice Network Africa, and hurrah for them, is actually taking government to court. And they have raised 10 objections against a treaty which was signed between Kenya and Mauritius in 2012 and was published in the Kenyan Gazette in May this year. What they're saying is that the Kenya's constitution, under Article 201 of the constitution, sets out the principles for public finance management and expenditure of public finances. And it requires the government to act in ways that are publicly sustainable. The lawyer acting for Tax Justice Network Africa now will have to prove that the policies they've put into place, in other words, this treaty they've negotiated with Mauritius, is unsustainable. Now, it seems to me that a key part of proving that case will be to show that the net gains from any foreign direct investment that might arise from the treaty will be outweighed by tax losses. And this is going to be a very, very interesting issue because, of course, a large part of the so-called foreign direct investment into Kenya is probably Kenyan capital that has been round-tripped offshore and is coming back dressed up as foreign direct investment. And this is very difficult to prove one way or the other because it's hidden behind Mauritian secrecy laws. Now, the expectation that at least the Kenyan Treasury has said in the past that they expected that the treaty would stimulate foreign direct investment, and they expected that that would be quite significant. But now we're beginning to see objections being raised from senior tax officials at the Kenyan Revenue Authority, who are hinting that they think that the tax losses might undermine revenue collection targets to such an extent that any potential benefits would be outweighed by the losses. So that's an interesting angle on this one. But it's not just the potential for capital gains losses that concerns Tax Justice Network Africa. There are also potential for very large losses of withholding taxes on services, management fees, insurance commissions and so on, all of which are used extensively by multinational companies to shift their profits out of Kenya to Mauritius. And of course, Mauritius has an effective withholding tax rate as set at 0%. So there's potentially a very significant tax loss there.
Very interesting to see what happens with that. Let's look at Australia very quickly. It's about to host the G20 summit next month. And Tax Justice Australia's just released a report there looking at the state of taxation. And they say the results they found are a lot worse than they expected.
Tax Justice Network Australia, working with the United Voice Union, issued a report which found that one third of the ASX 200 companies, that's the Australian Stock Exchange companies, have an effective tax rate of less than 10%. And they estimated that overall the tax losses to the Australian government come out at about $8.4 billion a year, just from the ASX 200 companies that they've covered. Now, Australia has a statutory tax rate of set at 30%, and they found that the overall effective tax rate was way below that. In fact, 14% of the companies they covered had an effective tax rate of 0%, close to 30% had an effective tax rate of 10% or less. So clearly there is a great deal of tax avoidance happening. And the good news is the Australian government has been forced to react and is now going to have an inquiry into corporate tax avoidance in Australia. Now, the bad news is, of course, that the Australian government, like many governments across the world, have been busy cutting back on their experienced revenue staff. They really don't have enough capacity to handle this whole issue. It's questionable whether they have the resources, that is, the staff, to monitor and audit companies that might be at risk. It's questionable whether they have the senior advisory staff who can advise on policy issues, and more important, it's questionable whether they have either the appetite or the capacity to litigate on major cases. So this is yet another case where what used to be a really quite strong tax authority has been undermined by government policy.
Thanks, John. John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network. Now it's time for the TaxCast special feature. We're living in an age of austerity, our governments are always reminding us of it, and apparently nation states can no longer afford to pay for the rights and benefits that have been achieved over the last 50, 60, 70 years. But while we've got all the figures out there on how much it's costing us to support the unemployed and the sick, there's very little transparency on how much companies are benefiting from the state. This month, the TaxCast looks at corporate welfare. When the media and politicians use the word welfare and talk about why we should be cutting back on it, of course they're referring to what poor people get, not what corporations get.
News polls find what Americans are thinking about all of this. Take a look at this. Nearly three quarters say that Americans rely too much on the government and not enough on themselves. Only 22% disagree. And with a record number of people receiving food stamps, 53% say this is because the government has made it too easy. 40% blame it on the...
Relying on welfare to provide opportunity is no longer the right focus for our times, and every Australian should pull his or her own weight.
For years, Britain's welfare state was a source of national pride, a monument to decency and fairness. 7 decades later, however, the British public seem to be changing their mind. 74% think that the government should slash benefits, and 7 out of 10...
Just how easy is it to get food stamps?
Well, Greg, it is a lot easier.
I guess it depends on what the state of the economy is at the time, how affordable it is. People should be helped, but not those people who don't deserve to be helped.
Thank you. Thanks for that introduction. Thank you. So to eliminate the deficit, there will have to be less welfare spending. We will provide a welfare system that is fair to those who need it and fair to those who pay for it too.
In these hard economic times, you'd think governments might be quite keen to review and cut back on welfare, subsidies and tax breaks for big business. Greg LeRoy of Trailblazing Good Jobs First has campaigned for greater transparency on corporate welfare in the United States.
It's hugely important because in many places, taxpayers have no idea how much money they're losing. Public officials don't like to admit it. It's often obscured in, you know, very fragmentary records and minutes and spreadsheets that are not published online or written about in newspapers. The number of very expensive deals has really spiked, beginning right during the recession, beginning in 08, and we're on track to have the second most costly year in U.S. history, second only to last year, which included the Boeing deal. So this is very expensive. It's getting worse all the time.
For years now, Good Jobs First has been collecting and publishing data on corporate welfare in what they call their subsidy tracker. Greg LeRoy again.
You know, about 80% of the data in that database is data that's now online, and we've been shaming the states for 7 years to do that, and we began shaming the cities and counties to start doing that last year as well. And then about 20% of the data in Subsidy Tracker is data that's not online, but which we gather by filing open records or freedom of information requests with state and local governments, and then we become the first publishers of that data. So we think we have influenced this debate a lot by putting all this data out there, and I think people who are new to the issue absolutely are shocked when they see the figures.
And US citizens are going to start hearing a lot more about these figures. Stay tuned for news of a breakthrough on making corporate welfare and subsidies public. Greg LeRoy again.
There's basically a tension here between companies that are very aggressive at getting tax breaks versus everybody else. And if you look at a study we did on our website about Memphis, for instance, 1 out of 7 property tax dollars that would normally be flowing to the general fund of the city of Memphis are now being given up in property tax abatements. They're called PILOTs. They're payments in lieu of taxes. But it's a huge issue because the city is closing fire stations, cutting back on public services, you know, skimping on public education. 63 of the companies that got subsidies are among the biggest companies on the planet. You know, they're all Fortune 500 companies or huge privately owned multi-billion dollar companies. And it really sort of begs the issue of, like, not only do they really need it, but if they actually claim they do need it, what does it say about the state of business in this country?
Across the pond in the United Kingdom, Dr. Kevin Farnsworth of the University of York's been asking the same questions. He's just completed a study of corporate welfare in Britain, the first comprehensive study of its kind.
My main point in doing this work really is to try to draw attention to the fact that there are a whole range of benefits that accrue to business. We need to look at some of these things, and we need to look at how that provision benefits business, but we also need to look at whether that's good value for money, whether the government is putting money in the right places. And, you know, these are really important questions that are just not tackled, not confronted in the way that I think they should be. And absolutely, there is a lack of transparency. There's actually a lack of even the sort of conceptual tools that you might need in order to try to understand corporate welfare.
Dr. Farnsworth says direct corporate welfare is costing British taxpayers £85 billion a year. It's a conservative estimate, he says, because the data just isn't readily available.
Well, the £85 billion figure is, you know, if we tot up the more obvious things like subsidies and capital grants to the private sector, plus fiscal welfare, you know, and benefits to the tax system, the value of loans made to private companies, the insurance service, things like the export credit guarantees that they get, advocacy and marketing. We get to that kind of figure of £85 billion, but, you know, that doesn't include a whole range of other things. And these figures, by the way, refer to 2011 and 12.
His findings make you wonder why there isn't someone somewhere in government actually doing some kind of cost-benefit analysis to see whether government giveaways are really in the public interest.
Corporate tax receipts, corporate income tax receipts in the UK were worth about £45 billion that year. You know, if we consider that the value of capital allowances alone are worth some £21 billion. And then other tax benefits, those to reduce inheritance tax on family businesses and farms, share incentive schemes, you know, that gets you to another £16 billion. So there's large numbers here that, you know, is based on government data.
When you start looking at some of the companies that are benefiting most from these kinds of subsidies, you find, as in the United States, it tends to be the world's largest corporations. Kevin Farnsworth again.
Then there's the question of the particular decision-making processes that go into deciding how much help and assistance to provide to a corporation and why some corporations get it and some wouldn't. And then more transparency would help us, enable us to engage in a discussion of whether it makes sense to provide assistance to a company like Amazon that then you know, may well undermine the interests of booksellers on the high street, and also then assiduously avoids paying tax. You know, it's those kinds of issues that we need to really look at in more detail in order to understand the complexities of corporate welfare. You know, we constantly have this debate about, you know, social welfare claimants shouldn't be given benefits unless they have responsibilities. Well, maybe we need to look at the other side of the coin. Maybe we need to say the same thing about corporate welfare, that corporate welfare claimants shouldn't be given assistance unless they behave responsibly.
It turns out that in 2012, Amazon paid less in corporation tax to the United Kingdom than it received in government grants. The United States has plenty of its own examples, and Amazon's tax deal with Luxembourg is under investigation by the European Commission. The good news in the United States is that the information gap on corporate welfare is about to be filled. The Governmental Accounting Standards Board, or GASB, is set to make state and local governments publish the tax breaks and subsidies they give to corporations. That's big. That's really big. Here's Greg LeRoy again.
You know, a tipping point has been reached now. It reflects an idea whose time has come if GASB is willing to embrace it. It means that it's a big issue, it's a prevalent issue, it's a costly issue, and it's a doable issue. It, you know, they think something tangible ought to be done about it and can be done about it. Then once the rules are in place, every state and local government will have to comply. So it's a huge deal here in the States. We think that no matter what your issue, whether it's small businesses or public education or sprawl or transit or any other kind of public amenity that needs its fair share of public funding, having better information out there about how much money is being lost to tax breaks is going to be hugely therapeutic. We've also never been able to make a definitive estimate about total state and local spending on economic development in the United States. So having the ability now to literally add up all the tax break data from every city and every county in a state and then add the state spending as well, you know, in a standardized reporting format, this is going to be huge. We've always said about subsidy tracker and disclosure, reasonable people may disagree about the value of these expenditures, but if we don't have good data, you know, we're all just, you know, yapping in the dark. We've got to have hard numbers so we can have a more informed debate.
Kevin Farnsworth again.
You know, if we look at the history of industrial societies, the history of capitalism, businesses need the state and they need help and support from the state. And there's nothing new in that. So we need to engage in a discussion on what it is actually that governments provide and how much it costs. I think that corporate welfare can actually help to shape capitalism. You know, not all capitalist states look the same, and they don't all provide benefits to corporations in the same way. And corporate welfare could be, you know, shaped very differently.
The silence on corporate welfare needs to end. It's our money we're talking about here, our economy, our lives, our public services, and our democracy. You've been listening to The Taxcast. You can find Good Jobs First and their subsidy tracker on www.goodjobsfirst.org. We'll be back next month.